Jane Doe versus John Doe, docket number 49010. Here on behalf of the appellant is Alex Brockman. Here on behalf of the respondent is Angela Sasser. Is there anything we need to take up, Mr. Brockman, before you present argument?
No, Your Honor.
All right, go ahead then.
May it please the court. Today we're fundamentally here to discuss about the misapplication of law, fundamentally applying Title 32 family law, domestic relations, custody remedies and issues in a Title 16 termination petition. Specifically talking about we'll start with the best interest problems. What the magistrate fundamentally found was she found that given the toxic relationship of the parents and some of my clients, a fault in creating that toxic relationship, as I wrote sparring in my brief, but I meant to write sparing, so I apologize for that typo. That sparing the child from that toxic relationship was a sufficient compelling interest to warrant terminating my client's rights in terms for as a best interest determination. The issue that's fundamentally give absent the adopt a plan for an adoption in the near or immediate future in a private termination, where the issues aren't those of arising out of a Child Protection Act. The issues there are the remedies for parental discord are all encompassed in Title 32. The court in a Title 32 action can restrict visitation to no visitation, to supervised visitation, which the court in the parents' custody dispute did. The court can vest sole legal decision-making with a single parent, which they did. And all the remedies afforded, and all the reasons the reasons the court found for terminating for defining best interest were all fundamentally Title 32 considerations of issues of making best issues of determining best interest in a Title 32 action. It's not fundamentally asking the court to reweigh the evidence, and even if it was that standard, I don't think that. Saving a kid from a toxic child custody dispute is a sufficient evidence, absent an adoptive father or absent. And further, continuing along that line of argument, Idaho Code subsection 16, apologize, Your Honor, 205(1) and 205(2) also encapsulate that distinction. Under subsection 1, the moving party bears of 16205 bears the burden to show best interest. Usually that's done by having some sort of adoptive parent that could step into the roles of the terminated parent. We understand that some of those considerations are different in a child protection case. We're not here in a child protection case. In a child protection case, the child and all the America's Safe Families Act considerations about expediting cases toward permanency aren't applicable in a private termination case. But specifically, it talks about whether a parent's abandoned a child, neglected a child, or abused a child. And then in subsection 2, we start talking about the times when the court, when the legislature has designated, when we don't even need to be talking about the moving party bears no additional burden to move along and show any additional facts. There's a rebuttable presumption. It's mainly when the parent, when the child was born as a result of rape, the abandonment, neglect, and abuse were so chronic and so continued that, as I quote this, it was so extreme or repetitious to indicate the continuing legal relationship between the parent and the child could create an unacceptable risk to the health and welfare of the child. Those facts simply aren't present in this case. Oh, and for those reasons, there isn't necessarily sufficient grounds to grant termination solely on best interest. But this has been recognized in Idaho case law when the Supreme Court in Doe, it gets kind of confusing because they're all in Doe, 157 Idaho 14, 2014. The court faulted a lower court, or the court sustained the magistrate's discussion of the matter, because the case that was presented to the magistrate was fundamentally a custody issue, and the court's like, the Supreme Court emphasized in that case the need to hold distinct family law considerations with domestic relations custody considerations for those of a termination of parental rights action. And it's just under my review and experience in this case, I'm aware of no any published opinion where finding that absent an adoptive father, where the termination of parental rights has been sustained when there isn't an adoptive father, there hasn't been some subsection 2 of 16205 type factor that was in the case, like sexual abuse of a child, and not cases arising from the Child Protection Act. I'm simply just unaware of where a superior court has been willing to basically say family law considerations are enough, custody considerations are enough of a best interest to warrant termination of parental rights. Now moving on to the issue of abandonment. The statute, the magistrate made two critical errors in her analysis. The first being she found that there was abandonment for periods of time before the 12-month gap from January 28th, 2019 to February 11th, 2020. I think that by even if there were at that times grounds, those were cured when the father reestablished a relationship. The child knew that was her father. She knew that the half sister that resides with the father was her sister. Any issues of abandonment would have from any period of time outside of that 12-month gap would have been cured by just reestablishing a parent-child relationship. I think that even if the statute doesn't have that definition, principles of laches and estoppel ought to prevent a party from stepping forward and making making those sort of findings. And so I think it's important to also look at the very definition and to understand the rest of the problems with the magistrates. The rest of the problems with the magistrates' findings it's important to look at the very definition of abandonment, which is the failure of a parent to maintain a normal parent-child relationship, a willful failure to maintain a normal parent-child relationship. And the court and the legislature has gone on to say that if this goes on for a period of 1 year, there's a rebuttable presumption that the parent intended to willfully resign their rights. In this case, yeah, it's undisputed that there was a 12-month gap in visitation from January 28th, 2019 to February 11th, 2020. However, what my client did subsequently is a show of what is relevant for showing what his intent was. He reached out to restart visitation. It's unfortunate that the mother waited 5 months to get back in touch with the visitation supervisor. And it's also more unfortunate that the visitation supervisor failed to notify the father, as documented in the record. It's true the father could have filed a contempt action, but that's putting fundamentally asking whether or not a father is willing to file a contempt action should be sufficient evidence to, or should be held against a father to say that he didn't abandon his child, that as one fails to take into consideration issues of people's ability to pay and sophistications of the court system. And next, so I think he was trying to maintain a relationship. It's unfortunate, given the nature of the custody arrangement, he had very restrictive visitation schedule and interaction schedule. He could have downloaded the parenting app and been in better communication, but there's testimony on the record that he texted the mother on the child's birthday, mother didn't facilitate visitation or didn't facilitate contact. So I think that there's not a showing that he willfully intended to basically abandon this child and willfully failed to maintain any sort of relationship with this child. And then I think just a review of the record just upon that, just as like it was the case reads like a standard, the underlying custody case reads like a standard, just hotly disputed custody case where each party probably did things that they probably shouldn't have done as they, just from the record, as they went back and forth, as they went back and forth fighting over this child. That's unfortunate, but I don't necessarily this smack of abandonment. Then the magistrate also erred in issues of the definition of neglect. And I think this is probably, strike that. I think that it also issued a definition of finding neglect. Because what the magistrate finally found that he didn't take enough steps to, he didn't take enough steps to warrant that he took proper parental care. But I think the magistrate over-focused on the proper parental care and the rest of, and didn't necessarily focus on the rest of the definition in the statute, which is proper parental care necessary for the welfare, health and welfare of a child. And there has to be the relationship together, because if we just focus on proper parental care, we're leaving the magic, we're allowing that finders of facts to just make, you weren't the type of, make arguments and justifications. You weren't the type of parent that I think you should have been. That's not what the legislature and the high bar the legislature set for this. It's the parent, they didn't act like a proper parent to ensure the child's health and welfare was taken care of. And of course, naturally, just because someone else was doing it, and doesn't mean you're relieved from a parent's obligation to do that. But I think those cases are highly fact dependent, which are absent from this case. When you're doing that, because in those cases, we really need to be looking about what the parent's actions were when they were in a position when they couldn't provide parental care. Because, for instance, if any of us could get arrested, legal and not be guilty or not guilty, but be in a position where we can't necessarily take care of our children. Or we could even use the example of a parent's getting deployed into the military. They're not in a position where they themselves can take care of their children, but then in order to find a parent neglected in those a child in those situations, we need to look what steps and what situations they were taking to ensure the child had the proper parental care necessary for their welfare. Basically, did you find a parental power of attorney? Did you have enough of a relationship with the alternative caregiver? And the parents took affirmative steps. In this case, there was a custody arrangement that precluded my client from doing most things that someone could do that a normal parent would do to ensure a child. To ensure that a child's health and well-being was provided. He had to communicate through a parenting app. He had to he could only had supervised visitation that he had also had to pay for drug testing at his own expense, and he was on social security disability. And it also, my client was also always the child was receiving support through his social security disability payments for the last several years. So there was support, and that he was doing what he could. And with that being said, I think that the termination of parental rights in this case would be detrimental to the child's welfare. She has a documented relationship with her sibling. She has a documented relationship with her father. The child really doesn't get much out of going forward in this case. And with that, I will reserve the rest of I'm open to questions from the court if they have any.
All right, seeing no questions from the panel, Mr. Brockman, we'll reserve the remainder of your time. Thank you. Ms. Sasser, any reply?
May it please the court, Chief Judge Husky and Judges Brailsford and Grattan. My name is Angela Sasser and I'm counsel for the petitioner respondent in this case. And for ease of clarity, I will be referring to my client as mother and I will be referring to the respondent appellant as father. Today, mother respectfully contends that the findings and rulings of the magistrate court should be left undisturbed on appeal. The reasons for this are one, that the magistrate court set forth the proper legal standards in its decision, and two, that the magistrate court's decisions relied on substantial and competent evidence in the record, finding that there was clear and convincing evidence that father abandoned and neglected the child, and that in the child's best interest, father's rights should be terminated. From the outset, it should be noted that an appellate court should not disturb a magistrate court's rulings and determinations on a termination in a parental rights case if there is substantial and competent evidence in the record. And this rule is cited in Idaho Department of Health and Welfare v. Doe, 2016-11, 160 Idaho 824. Substantial and competent evidence is evidence that reasonable minds accept as adequate to support a conclusion. And again, that is also cited in Idaho Department of Health and Welfare v. Doe. Thus, the magistrate court's decision in this case should only be set aside on appeal if it was clearly erroneous. And definition and that statement on being clearly erroneous is found in In Re Doe 2011-14 with the site of 152 Idaho 190. Here, the magistrate court began by setting out the proper legal standards in a termination of parental rights case. And the court declared that due process mandates that the grounds for termination are proven by clear and convincing evidence. And then the court cited to Doe versus Department of Health and Welfare, cited at 141 Idaho 511. The court then went on to articulate Idaho Code Section 16-2005, subsection 1, stating that in order to allow a termination, statutory grounds for a termination must be proven. And if one of those grounds are proven, not all, then the court can move on and conduct a best interest of the child analysis to determine if it's in the child's best interest to terminate the father's rights. After setting out the proper legal standard in this case, the magistrate court reviewed the record and correctly determined that father willfully abandoned the child by failing to maintain a normal parent-child relationship with the child. And this ruling by the court is in the record on appeal at page 77. The court offered several facts of support for this determination. And the facts that the court recites are on the record on appeal at page 77. And it discusses that there was no dispute that the father did not meet the child until she was 3 years of age and was completely absent from the child's life up until that point. The father did not request a visit with the child until 1 year after meeting the child. So he goes and meets the child and waits another year to request even having another visit with the child. Father's most recent custody was court-ordered supervised visits in which he only exercised 6 of the visits. Father had not been in contact and has not been in contact with the child for over 2 years, and his only attempt to make contact with the child since January of 2019 was by contacting Child Advocacy Services to resume supervised visits 1 year after disengaging from the visits. Based on these facts that the court recites, the magistrate concludes father did not maintain regular contact and remained absent, thus failing to maintain the normal parent-child relationship with his daughter. And that finding and conclusion by the court is set out in the record on appeal at pages 77 and 78. There is not a universal standard of what constitutes a normal parent-child relationship, and whether such relationship exists depends on the facts and circumstances of each case. And this ruling is cited in In Re Doe 2014-12 at 157 Idaho 59. Thus, in making the determination that father failed to maintain a normal parent-child relationship, the magistrate court here in our case was not bound to follow a universal standard, and it could assess the facts as it saw fit and as it did, as I just stated some of the facts that the court looked at. The magistrate court then properly found father's absence from the child was not explained by just cause. And in determining, in making this determination that there was no just cause for the father's absence, the magistrate court again set out and relied on facts proving that there was no just cause. And the facts that the court relies on are in the record on appeal at page 78. The court discusses that there was no evidence that father was prevented or incapable from maintaining a relationship with his daughter. There was evidence that father moved back to Idaho and mother did allow the father access, the father to access the child on a regular basis. The magistrate court found that the custody court granted supervised visits, which father exercised without interference until father voluntarily terminated supervised visits within a short amount of time. The court found that father's claim that his health interfered with supervised visits for the child in this case falls flat. And that's quotes from the court, the magistrate court, that his claims fall flat since he was able to parent another child, his daughter Kay, who was in his care full time and who he cared for seemingly without any issue. The court also pointed to that father has means to maintain regular contact, that he lives in a close geographical area to the child, he being in Nampa, the child in Caldwell, and that he has a steady income via his government wages that are paid through Social Security disability benefits. The father also claimed that he could not afford supervised visits, and the court found that this was not credible since the cost of these visits were subsidized by a grant and father's out-of-pocket expenses for the visits were nominal. The court found that he had means and the ability to maintain contact with the child, but chose not to do so. The court then stated that the father's absence from the child, particularly in the last 2 years, is willful, such that the evidence is clear and convincing that father was willfully absent from the child and failed to maintain a normal parent-child relationship. There is no just cause for father's absence, and that the actions constitute abandonment and establish grounds to terminate his parental rights. And that is in the record on appeal, pages 78 through 79. In making this determination that father's rights should be terminated based on abandonment, the statutory ground for abandonment, the magistrate court properly considered father's past and current conduct in the determination of whether grounds exist for termination. And that rule that the court consider past and present conduct is found in State versus Doe, cited at 145 Idaho 839. Thus, the magistrate court, taking into consideration father's lack of support and his absence early on in the child's life, as well as his absence during the past few years, is allowed under Idaho law. And so what the court did by looking both at past and current conduct was allowed and was proper. Mother's response brief details on pages 18 to 21 several facts that support the magistrate's finding of abandonment without just cause. Because of this substantial evidence and competent evidence in the record provided by both the magistrate court and by mother in her brief, this court should uphold the magistrate court's finding that father abandoned the child and that the finding was based on clear and convincing evidence. The magistrate court next assessed mother's grounds for termination and correctly concluded that mother demonstrated by clear and convincing evidence that father neglected the child by failing to provide proper care and control, subsistence, medical, and other care and control necessary for the child's well-being, and that the same was supported by clear and convincing evidence. And this determination is recited in the record on appeal at page 79. As support for this determination that father did neglect the child, again, the court points to a multitude of facts on the record of appeal on pages 79 and 80. The court recites that father has not been a consistent caregiver to the child and that he did not exercise any parenting responsibility for the child for the first 3 years of her life. And that although the child receives benefits from the father's Social Security, she has only done so since 2013, and that father has not directly paid for other needs of the child, that father was absent from the child's medical care and education, and that the child's needs financially, physically, and emotionally have all been met by mother. The court also found that over the past 2 years, father has completely has been completely absent from the child's life, and that such absence in the past 2 years was initiated by the father's own choices and not caused by any other person's actions. And consequently, there was no evidence in the record that the mother caused the father to not follow the supervised visits or the pronouncements in the supplemental judgment and judgment that he had to see the child based on the custody order. Mother complied with that order and never sought, and father never sought to modify it, even though he could have done so if he was dissatisfied. And this is, facts of the court's reciting. The magistrate court found, based on these facts, that father's omissions of care toward the child and his lack of involvement in her life constitute neglect, and that these actions and omissions are harmful to her well-being. And father's neglect establishes grounds to terminate his parental rights. And the court makes this determination at page 80 in the Record on Appeal. Mother's response brief also points to additional facts on pages 23 and 24 in the response brief that support the magistrate's findings that I just recited, and support the magistrate's finding that neglect has been proven. Because of this substantial and competent evidence in the record from the magistrate court and also from mother's brief, this court should uphold the magistrate court's finding that the father neglected the child and that it was based on clear and convincing evidence in the record. Next, because the magistrate court found grounds for termination under Idaho Code Section 16-2005, 1A and 1B, the court then moved on to conduct a best interest of the child analysis to determine whether it was in the child's best interest to terminate father's parental rights. The court cited In Re Doe 2013-15, which is cited at 150, which is from 156 Idaho 103. And the court determined that numerous factors can be considered based on the pronouncements in In Re Doe for a court to consider whether to terminate the best interest of the child. Some of the factors that the magistrate court listed when citing In Re Doe were the stability and permanency of the home, unemployment of the parent, the financial contribution of the parent to the child's care after the child is placed in protective custody, improvement of the child while in foster care, and the parent's efforts to improve his or her situation, the parent's continuing problems with the law, and the reality that children need stability and certainty. And the court sets out this law on page 76 in the Record on Appeal. The magistrate then listed several facts in conducting its best interest of the child analysis. And the facts that the court recites are on pages 80 and 81 in the Record on Appeal. The court recites that over the course of the child's life, father has not been a consistent parental figure, that the child was not in contact with the father for 2 years, that father's credibility suffered during trial, that father is difficult, uncooperative, and self-centered, that he engages in alienating behaviors toward the mother in the child's presence, that father continues to use illegal substances and suffers from what he testified is debilitating medical issues. The court continues and says that the father prioritizes his own wishes and terms above the child's best interests and well-being, and that based on the father's pattern of behavior during the child's life and the status of his relationship to his other 8 or 9 children, there is significant concern that father would ever be a consistent parent for the child. The court continues and recites that father does not support the child. He does not fulfill a consistent parental relationship to the child, and that it's not in the child's best interest to subject her to this toxic environment created by the father, the father's presence in her life. The court also states that mother has filled any financial gaps left by father and has met the child's financial needs all of the child's life, that mother has proven she's able to meet the child's needs and provides stability and certainty for the child's well-being. Based on these facts recited by the magistrate court in the record, the magistrate court correctly found that there was clear and convincing evidence that it was in the child's best interest that father's parental rights to the child be terminated. In each of these categories, the court's finding of statutory grounds for abandonment, the court's finding of statutory grounds for neglect, and the court's finding that termination was in the best interest of the child. The magistrate court set out the proper legal standard and then cited the two substantial and competent evidence supporting her determinations. Because of this, the magistrate's determination and ruling to terminate father's parental rights should not be disturbed on appeal. In reviewing father's appeal, it tends to focus on the fact that mother did not file a concurrent petition for adoption via a step parent. In addressing this issue, absence of a current petition for adoption by the child's stepfather, Mark, is not fatal to the magistrate court's determination that it is in the best interest of the child that father's rights are terminated. Statutory law and legal precedent in Idaho do not require a concurrent petition for adoption, nor does father cite to any legal authority requiring this concurrent petition for adoption. However, reviewing the trial testimony in this case given by a mother, she stated that adoption is planned for the child by the step-parent, Mark Austin. And this is in the trial court transcript, page 94, lines 15 to 24. Trial testimony also demonstrated that Mark loves the child and that he has intentions and plans to adopt the child. And this is in the trial testimony as well. Trial transcript, excuse me, at pages 139, line 2 through 6, and also in the record on appeal at page 70. In addition, the trial court found mother has always met all of the child's needs, including the financial needs, and that mother testified in the trial that to being able to pay for all the child's needs. This is in the record on appeal at pages 70, pages 80 to 81, and 89 to 90, and also in the trial transcript, page 88, lines 7 through 10. Because of this, father's arguments are unpersuasive that termination should fail because there is no concurrent adoption petition. And again, if the court looks at, and the court is aware of this, but if the court reviews Idaho Code Section 16-2005, and in order for a termination to happen, nowhere does it state that a concurrent adoption petition must be filed. If this were the case, then this would outright foreclose termination petitions if the petitioning parent cannot find another person to step in and adopt the child at the time of termination. Father's appeal also attempts to chip away at what the magistrate court did in relation to the best interest of the child analysis. Review of the court's best interest of the child analysis demonstrates that, again, the court set out the proper legal standard and cited to substantial and competent evidence in the record supporting her finding and ruling that it's in the child's best interest that father's rights be terminated. One of
Counsel, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you a question in regard to what I understand to be one of the father's arguments regarding best interests. And that is that the word abandon or abandonment appears in 16-2005-1 as well as subsection 2. And that the in subsection 2, there is a presumption regarding best interest. But that the word in subsection 2 has a different meaning, essentially, than the word in subsection 1. And that is, I guess, because of the company that it keeps in subsection 2, that is the other circumstances and conduct, which are fairly egregious. I think the father admits he doesn't have case law for that, but that those that there is a difference between that term in 1 and that term in subsection 2. Well, what's your position on that?
Your Honor, my position is when we look at subsection 2, as opposing counsel correctly pointed out, the court can grant a termination if it's in the best interest of the child and where there is abandonment. And essentially, it's if there is egregious behavior, I believe, by the parent. And it sets out, different I guess, examples of egregious behavior, such as rape, incest, lewd conduct with the child under the age of 16, or sexual abuse of the child under age of 16. And then abandonment, chronic abuse, or chronic neglect of the child. I don't believe that the difference, I believe, in subsection one is that you can't get to the best interests of the child analysis. You can't even go there until you prove first that there has been statutory grounds of abandonment, neglect, and so on and so forth. And so in subsection two, it's presumed that it's in the child's best interests if there is abandonment. In subsection one, there has to be a showing first of statutory grounds for neglect or abandonment. And then at that point, if grounds are proven, you know, one or the other, or the other grounds listed in subsection one, then at that point, only then can you go and do a best interest of the child analysis. That's my understanding of the statute, Your Honor.
So if there's a finding of neglect, then you don't go to subsection two and the presumption, because neglect is not a term that's used in subsection two. But when you have the statutory ground of abandonment in subsection one, or abandonment in terms of the basis for termination, in all cases of abandonment, do we then go to subsection two and find that there's a presumption of best interests in any case of abandonment? Or does it have to be an egregious case of abandonment? In other words, there is something different in when subsection two is employed and the presumption is employed, because the conduct has to be egregious, like the other circumstances set forth in subsection two.
I would agree with the court. Under subsection two, it has to be egregious. But in subsection one, the finding of abandonment, the statutory grounds for abandonment, you don't get to do the best interest of the child analysis unless that is found first. You don't move on to that. In subsection two, there's the presumption, as you detailed, that it's in the best interest of the child based on these things. But in subsection one, there's not a presumption that it's in the best interest until you first conduct the grounds for termination analysis, which is exactly what the court did here.
So in the normal course of events, if there's a finding of abandonment in subsection one or as the basis for termination, the court can go to the non-presumptive best interest analysis, just as normally you would in neglect, for instance. You to then turn to a non-presumptive best interest analysis and can find that it's in the best interest of the child without employing a presumption. You only apply the presumption when abandonment is the basis for termination, if the abandonment is egregious.
That is my understanding, Your Honor, yes.
Thank you.
May I continue, Your Honor?
Yes.
As I was discussing, you know, the father attempts to chip away at the magistrate court's best interest of the analysis standard and poke holes in it. And one of the things that he focuses on is that that the court used facts in its best interest of the childhood analysis, and also used those same facts to determine that there was abandonment by the father and also neglect. And the father does this in his opening brief at page 11. And mother finds no legal authority supporting this rationale that father, and nor does father cite any, that that a fact cannot be used by a trial court in the best interest analysis as well as in the statutory grounds for termination analysis under Idaho Code Section 16-205, or that something more is needed. And so I cannot find anything in the record, and nor does father cite to any legal authority. Father also cites also argues that there should be a finding in the best interest analysis that the child needs to be comparatively better off as a result of the totality of the circumstances, and that the court did not conduct this analysis. And the father, to rely on this pronouncement, father cites to a Supreme Court case in Ray Doe 2014-9, and it's at 157 Idaho 14. In that case, the Supreme Court discusses what the magistrate court did, and the magistrate court did conduct a totality of the circumstances test when it was looking at the best interests of the child. But nowhere in the case does the Supreme Court hold that a totality of the circumstances test needs to be conducted when a court is conducting a best interest of the child analysis. Even if the Supreme Court in Ray Doe did hold that, we argue that the magistrate court essentially did conduct a totality of the circumstances here, because the court on pages 80 and 81 in the record on appeal listed all these different factors, as I've stated in this argument, and reviewed what the father did and balanced what the mother did. And essentially, without using the buzzwords, the court found that the child was comparatively better off as the result of termination. Specifically, the court found that it's not in the best interest of the child to subject her to the toxic environment created by father's presence in her life. And again, that finding is on page 81 in the record. The father, along these lines, also cites to a Idaho Court of Appeals case from 1986, and a footnote in that case, this is Hoffmeister versus Bauer, 110 Idaho 960. The footnote says that that a court should consider whether the child would be comparatively better off if the parent relationship were terminated. And again, although the magistrate court in conducting its best interest of the child analysis did not use those buzzwords again, as the Court of Appeals states in this footnote, is the child comparatively better off? But essentially that's what the judge did. The judge essentially looked at the totality of the circumstances, looked at whether the child is comparatively better off, and balanced those factors in her best interest of the child analysis, finding that, again, it is not in the child's best interest that father remains, continues his parental rights. Finally, father talks about the 32717 factors, and that the court should not be utilizing factors that are typically that are used in custody cases to figure out the best interest of the child, that those do not apply to termination cases. And that is correct, and we're not disputing that. The court does not go through the factors listed in 32717. But again, the magistrate court correctly utilized various factors. There's no set factors that the court has to use. There's not a universal standard that the court has to use. And although some of the factors may seem similar to the best interest of the child standards in 32717, the court did not state that she was using those factors. And in the case that father refers to, it's in Ray Doe 14-09, and that's at 157 Idaho 14. The magistrate court in that case really looked at, it was more of a case of step-parent trumping father, and petitioners focused on showing that stepdad was the better parent than father, and really focused on who trumps who. Our case is different, where our magistrate court, again, looked at a variety of factors and several factors and lists those factors extensively on page 80 and 81 in the record on appeal. Our case is also distinguishable from this case in Ray Doe 2014-09, because there the magistrate court did terminate the parent's rights because it found that it was not in the best interest of the child, even though it found that abandonment, that the parents had correctly proven abandonment. Essentially, father's arguments to trying to poke holes in what the court did in conducting its best interest of the child analysis are unpersuasive. And we submit that the court not overturn or not find that what the judge did was erroneous. We believe that it was that the court properly applied the law, and that she supported that by substantial and competent evidence in the record. Mother is requesting attorney fees on appeal based on Idaho Code Section 12.121 and also Appellate Rule 41 for the reason that father brought this appeal frivolously, unreasonably, and without foundation. And essentially, mother argues that father is making a veiled attempt to essentially ask the court to reweigh evidence, that father is submitting theories that an adoption petition has to be filed, that the court should have conducted a comparatively better off analysis when these are not established by legal precedent. And essentially here, father's appeal is merely requesting the court to reweigh the evidence in his favor. And because of it, his appeal is brought with is without foundation, and a attorney fees should be awarded to mother for her costs and fees on appeal.
Thank you, Ms. Sasser. See that time has run.
Thank you.
Mr. Brockman, any reply?
Yes, Your Honor. I just have a few quick issues, and I'll try to be brief. Your Honor, I just wanted, I apologize, my brief was less than clear. I don't think it was my intent. I don't think I ever actually did argue that a concurrent adoption is a petition has to be filed as a condition of granting termination of parental rights. What I was attempting to argue is having a plan for adoption in the intermediate future is one of the most compelling reasons to substitute parental rights. And in this case, the testimony on the record is there is a plan to adopt that Mr. Austin, the mother's current husband, would like to adopt and plans to, but when the child's ready. And we're not told, we're given no information when the child will be ready. The child's therapist didn't testify when they thought the child would be ready. That's simply not present in the case. So there was no attempt to say that was a necessary step. However, plans for adoption are oftentimes the most compelling reason to find best interest to terminate parental rights, absent to showing that the continued legal relationship would be harmful, which I don't believe is applicable here. And once again, someone addressed that in my initial argument. There's a qualitative difference in talking about all the facts that the magistrate listed and those that are the most relevant in a private termination. And the legal standard that the judge used in that case really stems from a child protection case. And really, once again, like they're similar, but like to look at like fundamentally at all the parental deficiencies is much more irrelevant, absent some showing that the continued relationships compelling showing that the continued relationship's harmful. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. Apologize, showing the continued legal relationship's harmful. I don't think that's the like saving a child from continued custody disputes is the type of interest that should be found to be compelling in a private termination petition. Second, and my argument in regards to what the problem that the magistrate did in her analysis was by not focusing on something else in the record about best interest, what the magistrate fundamentally did was converted a subsection two, a 16205 subsection two analysis, what she found is a 16205-1 analysis into a 16205-2 analysis. Of course, the same factors are oftentimes relevant, but there often has to be something more, or at least a reasonable inference. There has to be something more than the parental misconduct itself gives rise to the inference. I think,
Mr. Brockman?
Yeah.
Could you help me understand why do you say the court took a subsection one finding of abandonment and turned it into a subsection two, because a subsection two would be a rebuttable presumption. Correct. And it doesn't really appear in the record that the magistrate court engaged in a rebuttable presumption analysis when it did the best interest analysis.
Your Honor, I don't think she actually did a rebuttable presumption analysis, but in order to come to the conclusion that, what the kid gets out of having a continued relationship isn't worth it, fundamentally turned the analysis into a rebuttable presumption analysis. I agree that she did not, that's not actually what she did. That's not how her reliance, how her analysis tracks. And she didn't use those magic buzzwords, but that's functionally what she did in her analysis. If you don't start looking to something else the child gets out of, as a result of the termination, you're fundamentally doing a subsection two analysis rather than a subsection one analysis.
But it seems that under a subsection two analysis, a rebuttable presumption would be once there's a finding of abandonment, then there is a presumption that the terminating parent has to overcome in order to show it is not in the best interest. And I'm wondering if you could point me to something in the record where the magistrate court shifted that burden to father.
I don't think there's anything specifically in the record where she shifted the burden. My argument would come back to I didn't address your question well enough in my initial response. I don't think there's anything where she fundamentally did that. But if you, in order to get to that outcome, given the facts in this case, you have to make a presumption. If you're saying, hey, the only thing this kid gets out of this thing is not having the parents bickering over them, that's basically putting the onus on the father to show why. I don't know how clear that is, but that was just fundamentally what the argument was trying to track. Just given that the quality and the type of interest that she found, that thing would only be relevant if you're doing a subsection two analysis, if that makes that at least a little bit more clear.
Thank you.
And I believe that's all the rebuttal I have for this argument. I appreciate the court's time, and I submit on the information submitted.
Thank you. The court appreciates the briefing and argument in this case. It is now fully submitted to the court, and we will issue an opinion in due course. The court is in recess until December 7th. Thank you.
Thank you.